Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I am John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, January 9, 2017. A South Sudanese church leader says conditions of South Sudanese living in a refugee camp in Uganda are bad.
Our government in the country does not seem to be aware about the consequences of what we are calling now as war in South Sudan, as problems of South Sudan. What consequences are these problems of our South Sudan producing on the people?
And women in Torit make ends meet by working very hard.
People are suffering. People, you go in the market, you get things very expensive. So that's why I managed to come and make a big plan that at least this one should help my kids.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The Archbishop of Juba describes as miserable the conditions of South Sudanese refugees in camps of Adjumani district. Archbishop Paulino Lukuduloro is calling on South Sudanese leaders to visit the camp and see firsthand how the conflict is affecting hundreds of thousands of South Sudanese forced from their homes by violence. He warns that many South Sudanese will not return home until they are sure the country is stable. Tito Justin reports for VOA from Juba.
Archbishop Lukudu and Bishop Emeritus Paride Taban, a retired bishop from the Catholic Diocese of Torit, returned to South Sudan last week after visiting Pagrinya camp in northern Uganda. The camp hosts about 30,000 South Sudanese who sought refuge after renewed fighting broke out in Juba last July. Archbishop Lukudu says South Sudanese leaders should see for themselves how refugees are living in neighboring countries.
Our leadership, our government in the country, does not seem to be aware of what really is going on about the consequences of our situation inside. The consequences of what we are calling now as war in South Sudan, as problems of South Sudan. What consequences are these problems of our South Sudan producing on the people?
Archbishop Lukudu says he returned last week to the capital via Yei River State's Greater Kajokeji and saw that most South Sudanese are too afraid to return home because of the ongoing conflict.
You can see the life of the people is good. They are okay, but the deep sense of peaceful living is not there. The people are not very sincerely, honestly, and deeply happy. Because we are still hearing that there are here and there, I think, some killings. And I think this, we must be very honest to ourselves. There are still killings going on, individuals and whatever it is, robbing, especially robbing of properties. And in that case, I think robbing, they kill people.
Archbishop Lukudu is calling on the country's leaders to visit displaced citizens inside the country as well as refugee camps sheltering South Sudanese refugees in northern Uganda and in other neighboring countries.
Let us begin now to see really what is going on, what consequences of our difficult situation, of our insecurity, what are the consequences, what are really the precautions of this. I think this is what I would advise, be it to the leadership of our country, as well as the leadership of the church. We need to make visits, official visits, to these places, see and learn and come and do something about it.
South Sudanese Information Minister Michael Makwe says he has not heard about the Archbishop's visit to the Ugandan refugee camp and cannot comment. South Sudan in Focus also reached out to Makwe's deputy, who did not answer his phone. Archbishop Lukudu says the warring parties of South Sudan should understand that they are responsible for all the suffering of South Sudanese in and out of the country.
We have to be serious now about peace. By all means, as the church is always advocating and calling for, stop violence, stop killing, stop guns. And whatever is to be done is this dialogue, this peace talking.
Archbishop Lukudu says church leaders are mobilizing to visit the displaced and South Sudanese refugees in neighboring countries. He says they are also standby to help in the process of national reconciliation and dialogue. Last month, 35 South Sudanese church leaders gathered in Nairobi, Kenya, to discuss the role the church can play in restoring peace. They urge the government to give religious leaders a chance to spearhead the national dialogue, which President Alpha Kiri recently announced, saying the church is the only neutral body that serves the Sudanese trust to lead the effort towards peace and reconciliation. For VOA News, I am Tiro Justin in Juba.
Several women are earning a living in the Imatong state capital, Torit, by growing vegetables along the Kineti River during the dry season. The women collect water from the river to irrigate their cabbages, okra, and tomatoes. As Dimo Silva Aurelio reports for VOA from Torit, local residents are praising the women for supplying the market with fresh vegetables during the dry season.
A pump connected to a plastic pipe in the Kineti River pours water onto Josephine Francis' vegetable garden. As Francis pumps, her teenage daughter, Winnie Ileha, holds the pipe and guides it to equally distribute water around the garden. Francis is among dozens of women who are growing vegetables along the banks of the Kineti River to sell in the local markets. Francis is employed by the Torit County Authority but says her civil servant monthly salary is not enough to sustain her and her family. Besides, she says the government does not pay her regularly. So Francis decided to grow vegetables, which she says feeds her 7 children and provides income from the vegetables she sells at the market.
People are suffering. And for me, before that, even I was not having this mind of digging around here or what, but during that time, people, you go in the market, you get things very expensive. So that's why I managed to come and make a big plan that at least this one should help my kids.
Francis says since she started growing vegetables a little over 2 months ago, she has realized the benefits.
Our kids have benefited, and even the little we are selling, you get with the shop, with the whatever, as the market is very expensive nowadays, eh? Even when you sell part of it, you get one boil of Dora. At least it sustain you for 1 day or 2 days.
Sigisi 5-year-old Martina Ituaris takes care of her daughter's 2 orphans after both parents died. Speaking in her native Oruho language, Ituari says she relies on the earnings of her vegetable growing to help her raise the 2 children who are now in primary 5.
I'm just depending here. Look, these are my daughters. Sons, the father and the mother died, and I'm now the one feeding them. I water this vegetable and take to the market in order to buy sorghum.
But Ituari says blistering hot days on end with no rain destroyed her garden. She was unable to harvest anything this past season. Regina Curino also grows vegetables along the river. Regina lost her husband during the recent conflict and now takes care of her 7 children alone. Speaking in Arabic, Regina says she finds it difficult to irrigate her vegetable garden and has asked the government to provide them with a generator that can pump water to their crops out of Kineti River.
I'm the mother and father for these children whose father died, so I'm tailing here every day so that they can be able to eat and read. If not, then no one will provide for them and they will not eat. That is why I am at this river so.
Alex Alam Ogitiri is one of the farmers who uses water pumps to irrigate his vegetable garden. Since he started farming at the river's edge 2 years ago, Ogitiri says in Arabic that he has been able to support his 2 children who study at the universities of Juba and Upper Nile.
In a day, I can get up to 1,000 South Sudanese pounds. I decided to get into farming because I have seen what good things it brings. If you farm, you will be able to eat, or if you have surplus, you can sell in the market and earn some income.
Women buying vegetables in the market say they are happy that despite the economic crisis, these women have found a creative way to earn a living.
These women are showing a sign of hard working. You know, like It is a new year, and when you see change like this, you feel very happy, and they are like feeding people. So when you feed people, people will love you.
The farmers say they are grateful for the contribution of the UN's Food and Agriculture Organization, who provided them with the water pumps. They say the number of people growing vegetables here has risen rapidly, so more water pumps are needed. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Torit.
The staple grain of Ethiopia is sprouting across America. Teff is said to overtake quinoa and other ancient grains as the new substitute for gluten-free and protein-rich products. Faye Lepidus reports for VOA.
Americans were usually introduced to teff at Ethiopian restaurants, where it's the main ingredient in injera, the spongy flatbread used as an edible serving plate. But American consumers at the grocery store are interested in the grain's nutritional value. It's high in protein, vitamin C, calcium, and fiber, and it's gluten-free, making it an attractive alternative to wheat.
Well, the popularity has been increasing recently, mainly because it's gluten-free grain, and that's very popular at the moment. You're finding it more in its whole grain form, in its flour form, in tortillas and things like that. So people are cooking with it a lot more. It's being more utilized in baking and things like that.
Nutritionist Alyssa Goodman says there's a good reason for that.
I think that all of us are a little tired of quinoa. We have had quinoa in everything, so I think we're ready for a change. And teff is a gluten-free grain. It's been around for a very, very long time. And I have to tell you, there are a lot of benefits compared to its counterparts of gluten-free grains that excel.
Sales of traditional grains have risen in the United States, with teff sales up 58% in 2014, according to a market research report, and the National Restaurant Association called ancient grains a top food trend for 2017, all of which is good news for this tiny, powerful upstart in the American diet. Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
In Ghana, expectations are high since the swearing-in of President Nana Akufo-Addo over the weekend. As Francisca Kakra-Fason reports for VOA from Accra, Ghanaians are hoping for an end to current economic hardships.
Nana Akufo-Addo was sworn into office Saturday before Parliament, fellow presidents from the continent, dignitaries, and thousands of Ghanaians at the Black Star Square. The inauguration ceremony was colourful, as many Ghanaians adorned themselves in traditional outfits from kente, a popular woven cloth from southern Ghana, and fugu from the north. But an arduous task lays ahead for the new president, who inherits a weak economy with an increasing debt, high inflation, plummeting commodities prices, and the city's free fall. President Akufo-Addo, in his inaugural speech, promised prosperity for all Ghanaians.
We must create wealth and restore happiness to our nation. We can only do this when we have an educated and skilled population that is capable of competing in the global economy. We must expand our horizons and embrace science and technology as critical tools for our development. We will provide vision and direction and shine the light down the path of our entrepreneurs and farmers. We are indeed counting on a vibrant private sector to drive growth and create jobs.
Some young Ghanaians are highly expectant of the prospects of an Akufo-Addo government. Salifu Fatau, a salesperson, says jobs must be top priority.
For the young people, we need work. We need work and good salary. We are looking on him to see to it that he's able to build a lot of schools, a lot of works for we the youth. For now, he has given us his word, so we are standing on his word.
Fadila to Ahmed, a draft woman, is concerned about the economy.
I'm expecting the government or our new president to work towards the economy. But that's my main reason why I voted for him. The economy is very bad. When you look at the value of our money, it's very low. The fire crisis, the Dufour-Dusa issue is enough. We had enough.
Faustina Dogbevi, hopes for lower education fees.
I want the education cost to be at least a bit lower, that everybody can send his or her daughter to school and pay school fees.
The tenure of outgoing President John Mahama saw widespread corruption scandals and apparent shielding of accused officials. The new president sounded a warning against corruption under his government.
I shall protect the public purse by insisting on value for money in all transactions. Public service is just that, service, and not an avenue for making money. Money is to be made in the private sector, not the public, and measures will be put in place to ensure this.
Meanwhile, on social media, President Akufo-Addo has been accused of using bits of former U.S. President George W. Bush's speech as his own in his inaugural address. The director of communication at the presidency issued an apology. Francisca Kakra-Forsen for VOA News, Accra.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, businessmen and women in Gabon hope to get an economic shot in the arm from the upcoming Africa Cup of Nations. Find out more when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
is it important for you to follow the news in other countries?
Of course, yes. It is important. That's how I get informed, actually. Because that's how I get informed and knowing what is going on around the world.
It's better to know what's going on in the world, what's going on in other countries, so that we be updated at times. Yes, it helps me to know what other countries are facing and how to help my country to develop the country, because there are some instances that happen in other countries that I can adapt here.
It's when you get to know how their current affairs is doing and how you can go about it different.
Very important, because I love the broad view of the whole international thing. If the elections are going on in the U.S., I'm so updated and detailed.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. Businesses in Gabon hope the African Cup of Nations, which kicks off in 1 week, will bring a much-needed boost to the economy, which struggles amid the global drop in oil prices. Muki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Oyem, the town that will host Group C matches.
This song supporting the national team of Ivory Coast, nicknamed the Elephants, blasts through speakers at the Oyem Market Square in Gabon. The Africa Cup of Nations doesn't kick off for another week, but die-hard supporter Alain Touari is already here with his music. He says his wish is for the Elephants to understand that they are defending their country, Ivory Coast. He says they should forget the quarreling and squabbles that have always brought misunderstandings to the team. Ivory Coast will play here in northern Gabon alongside the teams from the Democratic Republic of Congo, Morocco and Togo in Group C. On the streets of Oyem, discussions are mainly on the bounds the tournament may bring to the economy. Slumping global commodity prices have hurt Gabon in the past 3 years. Global oil prices have dropped by about 70%. The government relied on petroleum for about half its income and about 80% of exports. Gabriel Zomo, a Gabonese-born economic analyst, says businesses and workers are feeling the impact.
Le taux d'inflation reste relativement acceptable. L'inflation dans la CEMAC tour.
He says although the inflation rate has remained stable at about 3-4%, external trade has been very worrying. He says, added to that, the business climate has deteriorated as Gabon has lost 6 places in the Doing Business Index. He says Gabon, along with other Central African states, are looking to be increasingly hostile environments for investments. He says the debt level of Gabon is rising and the economy is becoming highly non-competitive. Restaurant owner Loga Agnes says she is hoping the people coming for the tournament will boost her sales.
Quand y a pas de mouvement, quand y a pas de fête, bien quand y a pas trop de soleil, y a pas de clients.
She says when there are no activities and when there are no parties, then there are no clients. She says a restaurant is only making about $40, that is about 25,000 CFA francs per day. She says now that AFCON is coming, she expects that to double and that is going to help her. But people are also thinking more long term. She and other business owners hope that AFCON 2017 will revive interest in Gabon as a tourist destination. Billions of people around the world are expected to tune in to watch the finals, giving the players and Gabon a chance to shine. The country will use four venues at Libreville, Franceville, Port-Gentil, and Oyem for the 16-team tournament. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Oyem, Gabon.
The trial of Biafran separatist leader Nnamdi Kanu resumes tomorrow, but the judge overseeing the case has ordered proceedings to continue in secret, sparking further controversy. Chima Nwanko has more for VOA from Abuja.
When Nnamdi Kanu was arrested by secret police in Lagos in October 2015, nobody dreamed the affair would go on this long. He has been granted bail once, rearrested once, and then remained in custody since then, despite court orders to release him. Now, there's another twist. In December, Justice Binta Nyako granted the prosecution's application, asking the Kanu trial be held in secret. The charges against the Biafran separatist leader include criminal conspiracy and treason. Protests in the southeast related to his detention have killed dozens of people, according to local rights groups. Amnesty International said in November the military has sought to squash the movement, killing at least 150 pro-Biafra activists since August 2015. Police and security forces dispute that version of events and have accused demonstrators of attacking them. The state argues that witnesses in this trial need to be shielded from intimidation and violence. Kanu's lawyer, Ifanye Ejiofo, rejects the thought.
They have the security to protect their witnesses. Why are they afraid? We're also talking about the fundamental right of the applicant defendants who have been falsely accused to want to see the people, without those people coming to give evidence against them, eyeball to eyeball. There's no form of shielding. It's totally unacceptable to us, and we cannot take it.
Kanu was the head of Radio Biafra, a banned independent station that advocated for the restoration of the Republic of Biafra. Talk of Biafra can strike a sensitive chord in Nigeria. The issue dates back to 1967 when Igbo separatists seceded. By the end of a civil war, 3 years later, as many as 2 million people are believed to have been killed, many from starvation. Despite this painful past, the issue of self-determination for the Southeast has experienced a resurgence, though the movement denies any connection to violence. Ima Powerful is the spokesperson for the indigenous people of Biafra.
This fight is an intellectual fight.
Yes.
We are not going to carry any arms.
At all.
And God has been there for us.
Yes.
We are not going to be violent.
Yes.
It's going to be an intellectual
war.
Yes. Are you getting what I'm saying?
Yes, sir.
We must go.
Yes. Yes.
Hey. So either Biafra or...
Yes.
President Muhammadu Buhari, who fought on the government side in the Biafran war, has ruled out independence for the region. In a statement in December, he called on activists to have a rethink. If convicted, Kanu could face the death penalty. Chima Nwankwo for VOA News, Abuja.
Turning now to Cameroon, where the streets of the city of Bamenda were empty today as residents honored a call to strike over increasing use of French in English-speaking parts of the country. Again, Moki Edwin Kinzeka has the latest from the capital, Yaoundé, where tension between English-speaking and French speakers is high.
A client and her attorney argue outside a courthouse in Bamenda as bystanders listen in. The client, Ashu Georgette, wants her lawyer to defend her in court after she was accused of illegally occupying a piece of land she inherited from her father. But the attorney refuses, citing the ongoing strike by Cameroon's English-speaking lawyers. Georgette is not happy.
As we speak now, somebody is constructing on the land, and I don't have any power to stop him. I've been waiting for the court to render justice, but my lawyer doesn't come.
Lawyers in the English-speaking southwest and northwest regions of Cameroon called the strike in September to protest what they called the overbearing use of the French language. English speakers constitute 20% of Cameroon's population, and the constitution says English and French inherited from colonial times are equally important. But most official documents are only in French, and judges, administrators, and teachers with little understanding of English are often sent to work in English-speaking regions. The lawyers have been joined by teachers and supported by young people. Protests in November led to clashes with the military that left several people dead, hundreds missing or wounded, and scores under arrest. The government opened up negotiations, but the striking teachers and lawyers stormed out. The leader of the striking lawyers, Bobga Harmony, says they will resume talks once authorities release youths who were arrested for burning police stations, vehicles, and Cameroon's national flag during the protests.
We maintain our disposition as civilized, learned men to dialogue. And dialogue doesn't mean you are giving up your position. You simply market your position to the understanding of the other side. And any reasonable other side who seeks peace will buy it rather than accuse infants of terrorism in a situation where that word has no place.
Harmony says the whereabouts of some of the arrested protesters is not known. Rights activists like Joseph Chongsi of the Center for Human Rights and Peace Advocacy have called on officials to reveal where the protesters are being held.
Cameroon government should without delay set up an independent and impartial investigation commission, ensure thorough, prompt, effective and impartial investigation of all suspected cases of death, especially those in custody.
In an address on December 31, President Paul Biya said he was open to talks with the protesters, but warned he will never accept any attempt to destabilize what he called Cameroon's hard-earned national unity. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
That's our show for this Monday. We now leave you with the song We Want Peace by Emmanuel Jal.
Oh yeah, oh yeah, I'm looking for some people who's looking for peace. Maybe together we could make the war cease. Now we can send mankind to the moon, and we can reach to the bottom of the sea. That's why it's really kind of baffles me that we cannot end wars and bring peace. And we cannot change the way people act, and we cannot change the way people think. So if we sit back, chill out and relax, civilization will soon be extinct. That's why I am. I'm calling on the whole wide world. Come on, people, would you help me? Let's scream and shout, cause we want peace. To say the least, I dedicate this song to the common people. In the middle of this common evil, I wish the world was a little bit better. Time to start looking at the man in the mirror. Fear is the devil policeman. Fear make good genocide with Hitler so he can. Feel a war of genocide and Abu was weakened. Tighten up the land cause nobody was speaking. That's why I am.
We've been listening to Emmanuel Jal with the song We Want Peace, and indeed the people of South Sudan want peace. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for being here. We hope you join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. And after Rwanda, and not far from Rwanda.